chapter 16, book of Matthew, chapter 16, we'll read verses 13 through verse 24. When Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" They said, "Some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, others Jeremias, or one of the prophets." He said unto them, "But whom say ye that I am?" And Simon Peter answered and said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered and said unto him, "Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say also unto thee that thou art Peter. Upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind in earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose in earth shall be loosed in heaven." Then charged he his disciples that they should tell no man that he was Jesus the Christ. From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go unto Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and raised again the third day. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, "Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee." But he, Jesus, turned unto Peter and said unto Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men." Then said Jesus unto his disciples, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." We've preached from this passage on several occasions. What we read here is the account of an event and a conversation that took place between Christ and his disciples. We see from verse 13 that this occurred in the coast of Caesarea Philippi. And everything that happened here and everything that was said here leads to these words of Christ, "Follow me, follow me." Those are the last two words of verse 24. Everything that happened and everything that was said in this account sets the stage, lays the foundation for those two words. Follow me. Christ said, "Follow me." And this is the culmination of everything that we've read here in this text and everything that was said in this text. Those two words of Christ, "Follow me," are a call to his own. He's speaking to his own here, his disciples. They are called to be Christians in their life. Today, as we've said many times, the word Christian has come to mean many things that it is not. And the word Christian today has almost become meaningless. To better understand the real meaning of the word, we read in Acts chapter 11 and verse 21 concerning those who were saved in Antioch that they believed and that they turned to the Lord. As a result, the church in Jerusalem sent Barnabas to Antioch to investigate the matter. And we read in Acts 11 and 23, when he came and had seen the grace of God. That is, he saw evidence in these people that they believed. He saw evidence that they had turned unto the Lord. And you read on there in Acts chapter 11, and you see that he exhorted them that with purpose of heart they would cleave unto the Lord, which I believe they did. We read in verse 26 of Acts chapter 11 concerning these who believed. Concerning these who had turned away from other things to Christ, and who no doubt gave evidence of grace in their lives, and who were cleaving to the Lord with purpose of heart, that is, they were identified with Jesus Christ. We read of these individuals that they were called Christians. First, in Antioch, they were called Christians. It's not a title that applies to all the saved. It ought to, or to all those who profess to be saved. In our text, in Matthew 16, those two words of Christ to his own, "Follow me." That is a call to be Christians. And again, it is the culmination of everything that has happened and everything that has been said in our text. It is a call to live for Him. It is a call to be separated unto Him. It is a call to be serving Him. When Jesus says, "Follow me," that is a call for Jesus Christ to have the preeminence, to have the priority, and to be the emphasis of our lives and everything we do. Follow me. That is a call for Jesus Christ to be everything in our life. For Him to be the object of our lives. For Him to be the center of our lives. Everything revolves around Him. He says, "Follow me." It is a life imitating Christ. It is a life obeying Jesus Christ. It is a life being fully committed to Him. Leaning upon Him. Depending upon Him. Trusting in Him. Cleaving to Him. It is a call to experience Jesus Christ. It is a call for you and I to have our lives shaped by Jesus Christ. And for Jesus Christ to be a relevant force in our lives. And those two words, "Follow me," are the culmination of our text. They ought to be our goal. That ought to be our goal. To follow Christ. That ought to be our aim. That ought to be our passion. To follow Christ. So it is a call to be Christian. The question is, how do we get there? How do we get there? How do we arrive at that point where we are literally following Christ? Where we are imitators of Jesus Christ? Follow me. How does this become our life? Is it just something that we decide we're going to do? No, I don't think so. How do we get there? Well, the answer is found throughout the text. I want to speak this evening on the heart, mind, and attitude of being a Christian.
The heart, the mind, and the attitude of being a Christian. What we read in verse 24 is really the application of everything that has transpired from verse 13. It's Christ making application. And he closes the application with these words, "Follow me." That's the pinnacle. That's the pinnacle of the application. That's where we want to be. Followers of Christ. That's what we're to aim for. First thing we want to consider is the text provides several foundational truths that form the basis of the Christian life. The Christian life, first of all, cannot be lived by anybody other than one who has been saved by the grace of God. That's a given. So we're not even going to dwell upon that. But there are other things that are necessary in the life of this individual who has been saved if they are truly going to follow Christ. Perception of Christ matters. The text opens in verse 13 with Christ asking his own, again, he's talking to his disciples. He asked them a question. He asked them a question about the perception, the world's perception of him. He says, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" Their answer is given in verse 14. "Some say that thou art John the Baptist. Some say Elias, others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." Their answer reveals that the world merely speculates about Christ. And in all of their speculation, they make Christ less than what he really is. Some say you're John the Baptist. That's less than what he is. Some say that you are Elias, others Jeremiah, others say you're one of the prophets. All of those are less, far, far less than who he really is. Notice also in that answer, John the Baptist, Elias, Jeremiah, one of the prophets. None of those have a life-changing impact upon an individual. If you were to believe that Christ is as great as John the Baptist, that doesn't have a life-changing impact upon you. If you were to believe that Christ is as great as Jeremiah, that doesn't have a life-changing impact. Perception matters. If we are going to follow him, perception matters. So after he asks that first question, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And after they give their answer, he asks another question. He saith unto them, "But whom say ye that I am?" The other question really didn't matter. Really didn't matter. You see, to you and I, it really does not matter what the world thinks of Christ. What matters is, what do I think of Christ? What matters is, how do I perceive Jesus Christ? And if we are going to consistently and truly follow Jesus Christ, our perception of Christ is of the utmost importance. Peter, acting as spokesman for something he often did, we see he answers the question in verse 16. And he spoke for all of them. He said, "Thou art the Christ." There's certainty there. There's assurance there. There's conviction there. Thou art Christ, the Son of the living God. Thou art the Messiah. Thou art God Himself. The world says, well, he might be John the Baptist. He might be Elias. No, I think he's more like Jeremiah. But the disciples, with full assurance and conviction, he's the Christ. He's the Son of the living God. So you can be sure of this. One will never live the life of a Christian, that is, following Christ, without there being a personal assurance, a personal conviction, and a personal realization of who and what Christ really is. This is the basis. Everything is leading up to follow me. Also, the realization that grace has made the difference matters. Verse 17, after Peter answered the question, Jesus answered and said unto him, "Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee." You didn't come to this on your own, Peter. And if you really believe that Jesus is the Christ, that He is the Son of God, that He is God Himself, if that is your conviction, if that is your assurance, flesh and blood has not revealed that to you, but my Father. That's grace. So he says, yes, Peter, you're light years ahead of what the world thinks. But Peter, flesh and blood didn't reveal that to you. But my Father, which is in heaven. We can be sure of this. Without a present awareness that grace has made the difference between ourselves and the world, we'll never truly follow Jesus Christ. Thirdly, we see there has to be the realization of our own insignificance and the realization of Christ's significance. It all matters if we're going to follow Christ. Verse 18, he said, "And I say unto thee that thou art Peter, Petras, a stone. I say unto thee that you are a stone." That's insignificant. "And upon this rock, Petra, I will build my church." In those words, he showed Peter his insignificance. You're a stone. But he also spoke of his own significance. I am the rock. And we can be sure that you'll never live the Christian life without the conviction of your own insignificance. As long as you think you're somebody, you'll never follow Christ. We have to realize our own insignificance, and we have to realize His significance. Keep in mind, everything is moving toward verse 24. Everything is moving toward verse 24. In verse 21, there is a transition from that time forth. It's a transition. He now begins to do something that he wasn't doing before. From that time forth, he began to show. Up to this point, he's been doing what? He's been speaking. But now he's showing. He's showing them. Perhaps he showed them from the Old Testament scriptures. But he began to show them how that he must go into Jerusalem. He began to show them that he would suffer at the hands of men, that he would die, and that he would rise again. He was showing that to them. Again, everything's leading up to verse 24. But what Jesus said here is more than a mere declaration of his suffering, of his death, and of his resurrection. Notice how that he must go into Jerusalem and suffer, and be killed, and be raised again the third day. It was a declaration of his own compulsion of heart. I must go into Jerusalem. It's a manifestation of his own spirit and his own attitude toward the will of God, toward the work of the Lord. Up to this point, everything he has said has been, he's planting a seed, the culmination of which is follow me. Now, again, he's planting a seed of thought by showing them his sufferings, his death, his resurrection, but more importantly, showing them his compulsion, his desire, his passion to do these things. Everything's leading up to verse 24. What Jesus showed them in verse 21 evoked a very strong response from Peter. There in verse 22. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, "Be it far from thee, Lord. This shall not be unto thee. You are above this, Lord. You are above suffering. You are above death. Spare yourself. This does not need to be." Peter's response, again, everything's leading up to verse 24. Peter's response revealed a major obstacle to follow me. It revealed a major hindrance, a major hurdle, a major opposition to follow me. Peter's response is an opposition. It is a hurdle. It gets in the way of living the Christian life, which is described in those two words, follow me. Again, everything is moving toward follow me. Jesus, in verse 23, remember up to this point, he's been speaking to the disciples. He spoke to Peter when Peter answered, but he spoke, in a sense, was still speaking to the disciples. Peter has reacted very strongly to what Jesus has shown them. And now Jesus strongly rebukes
Peter. He rebukes his attitude. His rebuke was so strong. He called him Satan. He says, "Get thee behind me, Satan." That's pretty strong. That's a pretty sharp rebuke. Satan. And then he said, "You are an offense to me. You offend me. What you have just said offends me," Christ says. What did Peter say? Basically, he said, "Lord, you are above this. Spare yourself. Save yourself from this." That whole attitude is a major obstacle to follow me. He would later show the foolishness of Peter's response in verse 25. He said, "For whosoever will save his life," and that's what Peter was telling Christ to do, is save yourself, save your life. And he said, "Whosoever will save his life will lose it. And whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" So everything is leading up to the application, which is verse 24. The culmination of it all is follow me. How do we get there? Well, our perception of Christ matters. The fact that we realize that it is grace that has made a difference in our life, that matters. The fact that we realize that we are insignificant and He is significant, that matters if we're going to get to this point of following Christ. But in the application, which is in verse 24, there are prerequisites for follow me. You are not going to follow Christ. You are not going to live the life of a Christian until these things are done. And what Jesus teaches in verse 24 runs against the current of the world and is in direct opposition to our flesh. It is in direct opposition to how we think. It is in direct opposition to what we've been taught most of our lives, whether directly or indirectly. What Christ sets forth in verse 24, again, is for His own. Notice verse 24. Then, in light of everything that has happened up to this point, then said Jesus unto His disciples. This applies to all the saved. If any man. There are no exceptions here. No one will follow Christ until they meet the prerequisites set forth in verse 24. So let's look at these prerequisites. If we are going to follow Christ, that is, live the Christian life, there must be a desire to do so. Notice again verse 24. If any man will. If any man will, that speaks of desire. It conveys the idea of determination. I will do such and such. It conveys the idea of resolve. It speaks of an aspiration that we have, a yearning
that we have, a longing that we have, craving. It implies eagerness. It implies enthusiasm. If any man will, I will do such and such. That implies a purpose, an intent. Christ says, follow me. You will not follow him unless you have a desire to do so. Unless you have a desire to do so. But it's not just any desire. This desire must be stronger than all other desires. The truth is, you and I have many desires. We have many desires. But if we're going to follow Christ, this desire must be stronger than all the rest. It must have priority over all the rest. No one will truly follow Christ without this. And does not this, in a sense, go back to what we've said up to this point? It goes back to our perception of Christ. I believe our desire for Christ is very much linked with our perception of Christ. If you have no desire for Christ, you don't have much of a perception of Christ. You don't think very highly of Jesus Christ. Perhaps you just speculate about Christ. No, this desire comes from the realization that grace has made a difference in my life. And I have this desire to follow Him, to be an imitator of Jesus Christ. So if we're going to follow Christ, there has to be desire. But we all know, by experience, that desire alone will not get it done. It's going to take more than desire. It's going to take a desire stronger than any other desire we have. And we need to examine ourselves. Again, we have many desires. Nothing wrong with that, depending on the desire. We have many desires, but is this the strongest desire that we have? Is this desire to follow Christ, does this desire swallow up all other desires? How strong is our desire to follow Christ? Again, I believe that depends upon our perception of Christ. But it also depends upon our next point. If we're going to follow Christ or live the Christian life, there must be an attraction to Christ. Notice Jesus says, if any man will come after me. After me. The word after speaks of a pursuit. The word me refers to the object of the pursuit. The object of the pursuit is what we are attracted to. Me. If we are going to follow Christ, there must be an attraction to Jesus Christ. You know why many who profess to be saved, and perhaps they are saved, but you know why many of them do not follow Christ? is because they have no attraction to Christ. They are more attracted to the world than they are Christ. Therefore, they follow the world. To have an attraction for Christ, again, is very closely linked with our perception of Christ. To have an attraction of Christ means that we have an appreciation for Christ. But it goes further than that. It means that we enjoy Him. It means that we have an enjoyment of Christ. You're not going to follow Christ unless you're attracted to Him, unless you appreciate Him more than anything else, and unless you enjoy Him more than anything else. Because you know what it is that you and I pursue the most, what we enjoy the most. Whatever it is that we enjoy, we pursue. We ought to enjoy Jesus Christ. We ought to enjoy Him more than anything else. There needs to be this attraction. Not only enjoy Him, but we need to be obsessed with Him. If you are obsessed with something, you pursue it. We must be obsessed with Christ. That is, we are pulled toward Him. We are drawn to Him. Examine your heart, examine your life. Are you pulled toward Christ? Are you drawn toward Jesus Christ? Do you have such an attraction for Him that you are drawn to Him? Or are you more drawn to the things of the world? It all depends where our attraction is. It all depends where our desires run. Also, if we are going to follow Christ, live the Christian life, there must be a denial of self. Again, desire alone is not enough. There has to be desire, but it's not enough. Attraction alone is not enough, though there has to be this attraction. There's something we must do. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself. That is, the desire and the attraction for Christ must be so great, so powerful, such an influential force in our life that it causes us to deny our very self. You see, that goes back to Peter's rebuke of Christ. Peter didn't understand what it meant to deny self. He's telling Christ, Lord, you're better than this. You're above this. As long as we think that way, we'll never follow Christ. We have to deny self. To deny is to oppose. We have to oppose ourselves. You may have desire, you may have attraction, but I'm telling you, it's a constant fight. You have to oppose yourself. You have to refuse yourself. You have to turn down self. Deny self. You have to renounce self. You have to reject self. Well, I'll give up such and such. That's not what He's told you to do. Deny self. He didn't say if you're going to follow Me, you have to give up certain things, though that is true. But you have to deny self. And if you deny self, you'll give up those things. It's when we refuse to deny self that we get in trouble. But if we're going to get to the culmination, which is following Christ, we have to deny self. We have to deny the entire self system, because it runs opposed to this Christian life. So the desire, the resolve, the yearning, the longing, and the attraction for Christ must be greater than self. You'll never get to follow me until that happens. Deny self. Also, if we're going to follow Christ, live the Christian life, there must be a taking up of the cross. This cannot be done without the denial of self. Notice, let him deny himself and there is a connection. This shows that there is an order. And the order is significant. You deny yourself, and now you're able to take up his cross. Now, this cross is linked to the verb take. So it is. This cross is not something that is laid upon us. It is something that we voluntarily, something that we voluntarily pick up. This cross. Keep in mind, this is all voluntary. Take up the cross. I do not believe, and I believe it does great damage when people declare this, I do not believe that this cross has reference to our difficulties, to our trials, to our afflictions. You'll hear people say all the time, well, I've got cancer, this is my cross. I've got this problem, I've got this problem, this is my cross. No, it isn't. That's not what this is teaching. First of all, you didn't voluntarily pick it up. This is something you voluntarily, this is something you are willing to take up. Remember back in verse 21, Jesus showed them concerning the cross. And this is a prerequisite to following Christ. The cross was an expression of the world's hatred. And it is connected with denying of self. In order to follow Christ, in order to live the Christian life, we must be willing to be hated by the world. And the only way you're willing to do that is if you deny yourself. The cross means that we are willing to be hated. We are willing to be ridiculed. We are willing to be mocked and rejected. We are willing to be thought the scum of the earth in order to follow Christ. That's what it means to take up the cross. And it's connected with the denial of self. the degree of all of these things. Again, verse 24 is the application of what has been said up to this point. Follow me. That's the goal. That's where we want to be. In order to get there, we see what has to happen. And the degree of our desire, the degree of our denial of self, determines the degree of how far we are willing to go for Christ. But when Jesus says, follow me, that is a call to go all the way with Christ. There is no stopping point. When Jesus says, follow me, he does not say, follow me up to this point. That's not what he says. There is no stopping point. This is going all the way for Christ. And how far we're willing to go is determined by our desire, by our denial of self. How much we're willing to deny self really speaks volumes on how far we're willing to go for Christ. We draw in our minds, we don't want to, but I believe we're all guilty, not all the time. We draw in our minds imaginary lines of just how far we're going to go. We can't do that. We have to be willing to go all the way. If it means that our own mother and father forsake us, we're to go all the way. If it means that our friends turn against us, we're to go all the way. You see, circumstances are not what determines how far we're going to go. Convenience is not what should determine how far we're willing to go. But that's a blessed life. Follow me. There is no better life. There is no better life for your children. Follow me. There is no better life for your grandchildren. Follow me. There is no better life for yourself. Follow me. That is our object. That's where we want to be. Where no matter what is happening in our life, we are following Christ. That means I have to always be denying self. Always willing to take up that cross. Always willing to be ridiculed. Well, if I do that, they're going to laugh. Get over yourself and serve God. Well, if I do that, this will happen. Deny yourself and serve God. Follow Christ. This life is possible for each and every one of us that are saved. And it is a life that is worthy of Jesus Christ. There is no better investment that you can make with your life than Christ. Follow me. There's no better way to live your life. And as we've said many times, when it comes to the end, when it comes to our final day, you know what? It's not going to matter one iota how much money I made, It's not going to matter one iota what kind of car I drove, how big a house I lived in. It's not going to matter. It won't matter. What will matter is if I live my life for Christ. I've witnessed a lot of people dying, and I have never witnessed the death of anyone who has lived their life for Christ who was sorry they did. Never. And I don't believe I ever will. It's never happened. I've never had anyone say, "Brother Dan, I wish I wouldn't have given my life to Christ. I wish I wouldn't have served Him." Never heard one person say that. I've heard many people say other things. "Wish I wouldn't have done this, but it's too late now." I'll say it. Follow Christ. There's no better way. There's no better way to live your life. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verses.